So I am going to give a little talk, and on not knowing, I am going to stop a couple times and break us into breakout rooms to reflect. So, all right. So today, talking about our practice of, and by the way, just give me a thumbs up if you can hear me just fine. Okay, cool. So embracing or accepting not knowing and what that means and why it helps. So obviously, we're at a time of great uncertainty. For many of us, fear, anxiety, and everybody reacts differently in this kind of situation. I mean, there's some people who are just completely unfazed. Some people who might be, you know, I think I saw something online about this. This is like a totally nightmare scenario for anybody with OCD. This is, you know, so it's, you know, it's a whole spectrum of reactions that people can be having. I don't know about how folks are feeling. I know that for myself, you know, while this was still a something that was happening elsewhere in the world, I could listen and be very concerned and feel sympathy and kind of see the writing on the wall. But on the other hand, it wasn't until I read, you know, there was a case, you know, really close by me that just, you know, I kind of felt that, you know, the fear run through me. And as we were talking in our small groups, like, you know, on Friday, I had the misfortune to go to Winco and, you know, be present with everybody, you know, filling their carts to the brim and waiting in a line that snaked across the store. And it, I think the most anxiety-producing thing for me was seeing shelves half empty. That, and then that sense of scarcity, that sense of like, oh my God, is everything going to fall apart? And, you know, I just noticed, it's very humbling because I don't usually experience anxiety, but I throughout the entire time I was in that store, I was experiencing anxiety at a moderate level. And it was just like, huh, you know, there it is. So fear is something about something that hasn't happened yet. And it's, you know, it's anticipation of something, and it's getting us ready to, for those primal responses of fight, flight, and freeze. So, you know, evolutionarily, this is a good thing for us to have evolved, to have this response. But of course, in the modern world and with our big brains, we can imagine, we can project into the future, and we can think about things beyond our immediate environment. So we can anticipate all kinds of potential threats, all kinds of terrible things that might happen. So the potential sources of our fear are much more, you know, so many more and so much more complicated. So, I mean, but we balance that actually with, you know, with our intelligence and knowing. If we know something, we know about something, we can, you know, helps predict what's going to happen. So it's a kind of sense of, you know, that's what knowing really is, right? I can categorize you, I know how you're probably going to act, and therefore I can protect myself, I can act in ways that will keep me safe. So not knowing in this kind of evolutionary basic level is a very scary, vulnerable situation. If we don't know, then we can't protect ourselves, we can't predict. So I thought I would just, to make this kind of real, hopefully not freak people out too much, I thought I'd break into groups for just 5 minutes, and that we could just share what concerns we have right now. If you don't want to share, that's fine. Just say, I pass. And then you can use up the time. however you like. Probably break up two people into groups of four. So just, you know, how are your concerns manifesting right now? And let's see, do that. And you do have to accept your, it looks like we have breakout rooms already established. So I'm going to kind of I make them smaller. Sorry. I didn't realize the breakout rooms would recreate. Look at that. So if there are 24 of us and we want four people, that's six rooms? Okay. I am going to recreate rooms and then open, and then you will accept a...
Wow, that... Boy, that was a hard ending.
Yeah, that seems super short.
mid-sentence. No, anyway.
Didn't you get a little, you're going to end in 60 seconds?
Yeah. Yeah, but it was still super short.
We're working out, right? Because people can get used to having, like, a little timer. That helps.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks for being patient and sticking with it. All right, so so fear is our natural response. It can be inappropriate and debilitating. Of course, it can be out of proportion to what's happening. It can be in response to something that's really out of our control. So... in a sense, it's not all that helpful because there's nothing that we can do. If it's kind of an ongoing situation, our fear and anxiety can become just chronic, you know, that we suffer in terms of our health and we can't sleep. And so it has negative impacts in that way. It can paralyze us or cloud our judgment. So we want to manage our fear. So this brings me to practice, which, as I've defined before, is living deliberately. So here's the situation. Here's what I'm feeling. What can I do to, you know, relieve suffering? What can I do to find some more equanimity? What can I do to gain a little courage? And this is not about practical ways that we're trying to protect or defend ourselves. So, I mean, that's obviously, there's a time and a place for that. Washing our hands, stocking up on canned goods, whatever. So what I'm talking about now is not about managing the subject of our fear or, you know, defending ourselves or whatever. There's a time and a place for that. But this is, you know, what else in our behavior, our own body and mind, that we have some choice in the matter about what's some way, things that we can stop doing or do or think about in order to decrease our fear. So actually, we were studying the hindrances not long ago, and even though fear is not exactly listed as a hindrance, you know, it's very similar in that, you know, like aversion and the restlessness and worry. So we respond to it in the same ways, with the first step being mindfulness. Ah, fear has arisen in me. I am feeling fear. Like mindfulness being the binoculars, and you get whatever it is into your field of vision and you keep it there. So it's like we turn our attention from the subject of our fear onto the experience of fear itself. And sometimes that is enough to relieve some of the situation. Then we take note of what in the Buddhist tradition they call it nutriments. What is feeding? Are we doing anything in our immediate behavior that is feeding our fear? Are we checking the news every 10 minutes to find out how many more people have been infected? Are we watching pandemic movies? What are we doing that, you know, isn't necessary but actually might be inflaming our fear? And those are things that we might have a choice to stop or to moderate or to do differently. The third thing is antidotes. What are some positive things that we can do to actually allay some of our anxiety? You know, spending some time in good conversations with good friends. That's at the top of the Buddha's list. You know, doing this kind of thing, right? Trying to interact with people who are trying to be positive, not overreact, etc. And then the fourth thing, well, and also like in terms of antidotes, of course, there's taking proper care of ourselves, coming to Sangha, sleeping well, eating, exercising, etc. And then the fourth thing, what can we let go of that, I guess in any situation where I find myself experiencing something negative and like dukkha, like causing suffering. So what is there in this situation that I can let go of? Is it, like I said, needing to be sure that I'm going to be okay and all my loved ones are going to be okay? So needing to know, can I just release my grasp on that need to know, which, you know, brings us to the not knowing, which we'll get to. So we all have different ways, I think, that we are, things that we are doing to take care of ourselves emotionally and spiritually at this time. So I will break us out. This time I will be sure to give you 5 whole minutes. So make sure that each person tries to limit it to a minute so that each person can speak. And this will be the last time that I break you out, in case any of you hate that. So for 1 minute each, and answering the question, other than just trying to ignore what's going on, what are some things you are doing in order to decrease your fear and anxiety or to increase your equanimity? You know, other than the practical measures, other than the things that you are doing in a practical way to help insulate you from the virus, blah, 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 take care of your health. But what are some other things kind of more practice oriented that you are doing to decrease your fear and anxiety? Five minutes. All right. I think we're all back. So onto our practice of not knowing. Of letting go, essentially, of having to know. And what does this really mean? I think each of us will have our own experience of this. And when we open it up for Q&A in a little bit, if you have your own way of describing how you do this, how this manifests, feel free to share. I guess for me, right, what it means is checking in with right here, right now, which really is the only reality. that it's the only reality. where we don't actually know what's going to happen. I mean, we, you know, even our supposed knowing is really just a guess. It's really just a predictive guess about what we think is going to happen. But we don't really know, and we have very, very limited control and influence over what happens. But strangely, when we're grounded in reality, we're much better able to respond effectively and freely. I appreciated this in theory. I really appreciated it in physical reality when I took Aikido, which some of you have heard me mention, where essentially the kind of Aikido I was practicing was, it's like trying to cultivate the mind of Zazen in a way, that kind of still mind that's not trying to anticipate or do anything, trying to have that mind in movement and activity. And I found it so remarkable. If we hold that mind in movement and activity, we are much more, I mean, we are capable and stable and responsive at a way far, far beyond what we're capable of with our discriminating mind. For instance, there was this exercise where somebody would stick out a staff, and then you try to hit the end of that staff with another staff, and they would stick it out, pull it back, and stick it out, and pull it back. And if you're trying to hit the stick, you know, you're watching the person move, and you're like, you know, trying to hit it, and it, you know, sometimes you would manage, but most of the time not. That was just the timing of it, this person acting, you reacting, you would rarely ever manage to hit the end of the stick before they pulled it back. But if you calmed what they called it, coordinating your mind and body, if you calmed your mind and body and you stopped trying to anticipate and you just let something deeper take over, then you could just like hit the end of that stick just every time, just like clockwork. And to me, that was like, oh my God, this stuff really works. You know, there's a real truth to this, that if we can kind of let go of our discriminating mind trying to grasp and understand and make sense and anticipate, I don't know how to describe it, a deeper level of functioning that we can trust. So even though it sounds like it's crazy to, you know, let go of knowing or embrace not knowing, like, you know, we're just not going to protect ourselves. That's really not the case. Actually, when we let go of that kind of knowing, we're very present, and our perception is open, and we're much freer to respond, and our responses tend to be more appropriate. And of course, we're cultivating this. This not knowing what have you, that's one of the things that we're cultivating during Zazen, definitely, is to try to sit there and over to just let go of our efforts to plan and understand and analyze and control, to just let go of that and simply be alive. But we can also do that, of course, moment to moment, mindfulness throughout the day, you know, just coming, taking a few breaths, and we're back in this moment. So sometimes we think that, I mean, ordinary not knowing, we think about all the things that we can't predict to the satisfaction, to our own satisfaction. And we think in a way that we're conscious that we're not, that we don't know. But what we're actually doing is imagining all kinds of terrible things that might happen or could happen. So parts of us think we know something like this is going to happen. Maybe I can't predict it exactly, but I know something awful is going to happen. Or we think we know what it'll be like. Or we think we know how we'll react. But our imagination is very shallow biased and limited in, you know, what we can imagine, and the things that we can imagine, it's almost like we're imagining a two-dimensional scenario, where reality is just much more multidimensional and complex. Now, I almost want to say our waking imagination is shallow, because sometimes in our dreams we'll end up thinking outside the box in a way that we can't when we're awake. So one of the things that I kind of want to call our attention to, that when we contemplate the future and we realize we don't really know what's going to happen, but then what tends to lurk in our minds is all the terrible things that can happen. What we don't tend to take into account is many of the positive outcomes that are interwoven with any negative situation. It's complex. And I think some of people I've been hearing, you're already talking about it. I mean, in a way, we're involuntarily simplifying our lives. I don't know about you, but I mean, there's part of me just like, there's all kinds of projects and plans. And, you know, I wanted to go to Session at Great Vow in April and looking forward to it, but now I can't. So it's like there's some spaciousness that is very, very, it's hard to come by in modern life. I think we can end up recognizing how important Sangha is to us. Wow, you know, if we really can't meet, if we really can't connect, wow, we really, you know, it makes us appreciate that. It makes us think outside the box about how we can connect. You know, what are other ways that we can stay connected? And actually, you know, there's many ways that our Sangha and other Sanghas haven't been doing the best job at keeping connections with people who are at a little bit of a distance or can't come very often for some reason. And now all of a sudden, bang, we have all kinds of online stuff available to people. And we're thinking, you know, how else can we start a kind of a better forum where we can have discussions? What other ways can we connect? There's opportunities for generosity. I saw somebody passing around a little thing you could print out and fill out and say, and like drop off at your neighbors and say, hi, I'm this person. I'm available to do this if you need help. I'm available to go get some groceries, and here's my contact information or whatever. You put these little bodhisattva slips out for people. Another thing that I saw today was a suggestion from a Zen teacher, Soto Zen teacher, in Nova Scotia, who said, you know, now that we've all moved online, he said, if I had invited any of you to be a guest speaker via video at my Zen center a week ago, you all would have said, "Nah, you know, that doesn't sound that great." But I said, now I can invite you, and you're going to be just as present as everybody else who is on the call. So actually, this could end up being kind of a cool, like, teacher exchange that we do, and we could end up having guest teachers from all over participate. And I like to think, too, that, you know, in our country, we might be reminded of how important it is to have a strong and well-resourced and organized government. You know, it's been quite a wave of time of people criticizing government and wanting to tear down government, but this is the kind of situation where we need it. So, I guess I'll also just close by saying this is also an opportunity to strengthen our faith in practice. I guess for me that comes up as whatever happens, I'll practice with it as best I can. I mean, I can't do anything else. I can hope that my, you know, positivity and sense that things are worth it and whatever, I hope that those will stay strong through anything. But all I can do is meet the challenges when they come. And there's a sense of sufficiency that, you know, I don't know how each of you feels about yourself and your practice. But I think it is possible to develop a sense of sufficiency. Not that, like, we'll be able to handle absolutely everything that comes our way with no problem, but just, yeah, at times we may struggle, at times we may experience fear or sadness. But I don't know, there's something. I find myself asking, what are we really afraid of? And in a way, I would say, I mean, we're afraid of death, illness, and loss, but I think sometimes there's something even deeper there that we're afraid of. That I mean, we don't want death, illness, and loss, of course, but I just thought of reading a little bit from Viktor Frankl. So this is Man's Search for Meaning, which is, so Viktor Frankl was in the concentration camps during World War II. And he said he watched people and their responses in the difficulties of the concentration camps. And he said, fundamentally, anyone can, even under such circumstances, decide what shall become of him mentally and spiritually. He may retain his human dignity even in a concentration camp. Dostoevsky said once, there is only one thing I dread, not to be worthy of my sufferings. These words frequently came to my mind after I became acquainted with those martyrs whose behavior in camp, whose suffering and death bore witness to the fact that the last inner freedom cannot be lost. It can be said that they were worthy of their sufferings, that they bore their suffering was a genuine inner achievement. It is this spiritual freedom, which cannot be taken away, that makes life meaningful and purposeful. So I will end it there. If anybody would like to make a comment or ask a question, please, there's a chat button at the bottom of your screen. You might have to move your cursor around or touch your screen in order to see it. And if you just type your name into the chat, then I will call on you and you can unmute yourself. And otherwise, it's kind of awkward to just call on people who raise their hands when I can't see everybody on the screen. Shri, and go ahead, while Shri's talking, go ahead and put your name on the list if you wanna say something next.
So speaking of sufficiency, if you all get bored of making the same old recipes and want new stuff, I also do cooking lessons for people. I cook 99% of the time at home. Feel free to message me and I'll show you how to make stuff. And a really good way to pass the time if you're bored is to make super complicated things and then eat them. So,
nice suggestion.
Hey, Danielle.
Yeah.
This is Jinryu, and I sort of missed the instruction on how to tell you that I'd like to ask a question, but can I ask a question?
Sure, but let me just say it for other folks. So, during a Zoom session, you can type in a message to people, and you do that by, there's a control at the bottom that says chat.
Right.
And if you click that, then it should, a little window should pop up where you can type a message. And if you don't see that, we can do tech support later, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, I can ask somebody about that later. I see the window, but anyway. First of all, I really appreciate the reading that you did out of Frankl's book. And this is not on the same scale at all, but Dwayne was telling me last night, there's this website, and I'm going to mess up the name. I think it's Nextdoor or Nextdoor Neighbor or something like that. And there were postings like, I'm available to go get groceries, and I'm available to look after your kids if you need to go to work. So I thought that was very, that made me feel good to know that people were responding that way. And I do have a general sense that, that the community, however you want to define that, is coming together. The question I have is, would you mind just going back to the Aikido example and repeating, you talked about knowing, a deeper level of knowing. Can you just elaborate on that a little bit more?
Yeah, sure. I don't know. I mean, there's a... We're all different, but I definitely tend toward the intellectual. I mean, it's not that I'm not emotional, but I like to understand things. So it's very easy for us to essentially to understand the teachings, to understand kind of in theory. But to not realize that our understanding is still pretty much at the intellectual level and not embodied, I guess. And really, I guess I see myself, and I would imagine that many people are like this in some sense. I see myself as like a doubting Thomas. So, you know, if I saw Christ risen again and everybody was excited about it, I'd be like, yeah, but... I mean, this is pretty far out. I don't know. But, like, if I went over and I was able to touch him, then I'd be like, oh! Like, there's a way that we have to verify this practice physically. And this happens in different ways, but it has to be brought into the body. Or... Because in a way, like, the fear that we're talking about is a primal body-based fear. It's about our survival. So if our practice hasn't affected us at that level, it's that there's going to be a level of fear that it can't touch. You know, that you go like, yes, I know in theory everything comes and goes and that I'll pass away someday and it's all okay. But, you know, your body doesn't know that. So, I feel like that kind of, I mean, I got it through Aikido, but I think we learn this through our Zazen, which is also a physical practice. We learn this through our daily lives. We learn this through just putting it into practice. When we realize we let go of some of that effort to control and let things flow more naturally, and it actually works better. So... it looks like Amelia was in the list. If you want to unmute yourself.
If it's okay, I don't want to know if it's appropriate. In our small section, I talked about this koan that I had read that just touched me so deeply, and I wondered if I could share it here. It's, people have probably seen it. It's by Lynn Unger, and it's called Pandemic. Could I read it?
Sure.
What if you thought of it as the Jews consider the Sabbath, the most sacred of times? Cease from travel. Cease from buying and selling. Give up just for now on trying to make the world different than it is. Sing, pray, touch only those to whom you commit your life. Center down. And when your body has become still, reach out with your heart. Know that we are connected in ways that are terrifying and beautiful. You could hardly deny it now. Know that our lives are in one another's hands. Surely that has become clear. Do not reach out your hands. Reach out your heart. Reach out your words. Reach out all the tendrils of compassion that move invisibly where we cannot touch. Promise this world your love, for better or for worse, in sickness and in health, so long as we all shall live. It's just really touching.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Sure. Anyone else? You could just unmute yourself and talk, I guess. We're not competing too much with each other.
So I wanted to actually piggyback on what you said, something, Domio, about finding new ways to connect. So the good thing about all these university closures and things is that people with disabilities have finally gotten the university administrators to give them more access from home. And this is something that they've been asking for a long time, and a lot of teachers, a lot of people have been naysayers and saying, you know, lots of issues, blah, blah, blah. But now that everybody's forced to do this, they are getting the maximum out of their education. And there's been a lot of chat about that and how they're making things more equitable. So that's a really good thing to, you know, be happy about. Just wanted to give some positivity to the thing.
Well, I will just wrap up by saying, I want to say something, Domio.
Yeah.
I just want to say that I was listening to a talk, and because I was trying to get ready for my social hosting ceremony, and I was working with my koan, and so my koan is about Kuan Yin and Kuan Yin, and how her eyes and hands are always available in particular ways, not like just as an idea like you were talking about, but it's as simple as reaching for your pillow in the dark. So what I'm trying to say is that in times like this, your faith gets tested a little bit, because if Kuan Yin's hands and eyes are everywhere, why are people dying? So then I think that when I was listening to this talk, he said, we don't know. We just call, you know, skeptics will say, well, where? This is just something like a childish belief that you want to comfort yourself with. But he said, and I really want to practice this, is you don't know. Like you said, you don't know. All you can do is call, and all you can do is call on Kuan Yin, even as the ship goes down. Mm. So I feel like it's going to be difficult to do that when it comes to your personal ship going down, you know, like if I'm hooked up to a ventilator and I know I'm going down, I don't know. Will I call her on, call Kuan Yin? But there's comfort in knowing that just the calling is enough. Nothing else. Just the calling is enough. Just the practice is enough. I don't know if it's going to I don't know if it's going to provide strength when I really need it. I don't know, but all I can do is practice. I mean, that's all I can do. Call on her, even which actually means just calling on ourselves, right? Calling on our own reserve. So that's what I wanted to say. I'm going to call on her as the ship goes down. That's it.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I guess just in closing, I wanna say to encourage people to have sympathy and patience with your own fear. That you know, I've felt it. I'm gonna feel it. I think it's natural to feel it at times. Yeah, and that's okay. We're not spiritual failures because we feel that. Our practice is about what we do in response. So, but also to have, if you don't feel fear, to also just be really sensitive and gentle with other people who are feeling fear, you know, to be conscious of the fact that, that there's other people out here who are. And I guess just in a larger sense of closing, thank you for your patience with this new format. And like I said, please feel free to email me or Zach or Shree if you have any, if you had any tech issues or questions or suggestions for how we might proceed differently. But otherwise, I just want to say that I am deeply touched that so many people showed up today. This is, I'm so grateful for the ability to connect this way. If we just hadn't met today at all, that would just feel so sad. Just on top of everything else, that would just feel so sad. But now, I mean, okay, perhaps it's not as good as meeting in person, but it's certainly better than nothing. And Phil, like, pointed out, he was able to attend from Hood River. So, yeah. All right, well, this is the awkward part, I guess. We just say... I'll close by saying, abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond, thus we bow to Buddha. And everybody can recite with me if they like, all Buddhas throughout space and time. All honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna, parami.